Good evening, one and all. Yeah, I'm a bit rushed tonight. I was so busy trying to sort some other issue out. Suddenly found it was like 2 minutes to go before the show starts. But luckily, my guest is here, and so am I. Yes, it's, I know, October already. Well, nearly October, halfway through September. And here we are in Connecticut with temperatures of 80 tomorrow. I know, and it's nearly October. But what can we do, eh? Well, what we can do is introduce our guest on the show today, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have this lady, and she is a... what can I tell you about her? She is... well, I don't know.
She's an
author. She's
mindset.
She's backing me. She's telling me in the background. A mindset coach. That's what I knew it was something like that. Entrepreneur. You know, she does all these sort of things. And educator, author, mindset coach, and educator on the topic of creating a life you love. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Well, she's here because she's back. She's prompting me in the background. I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Christina Betjeman. Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very good. How are you?
Oh, what a rush. I tell you, I mean, I was trying to sort out this remortgage stuff, right? And typically you send the stuff through to them, and I think it's the fifth time and they still can't find the stuff I send through to them. And I'm trying to reply to them, and I've got like three different people I'm talking to. You see, you send it to one thing, now it says, well, I never got it, and the other one says, oh, but you haven't sent the... I tell you, of course, suddenly I look at the clock and it's, oh my goodness, it's 2 minutes to go. I thought I had plenty of time, but I am here and so are you. Now, one of the... Exactly, which is the important thing. One of the things we often ask when we get a guest on the show, we, being the royal we, of course, I often ask on the show is, you know, did you start writing as soon as you could hold a crayon in your hand? Well, in your case, it wasn't far off, was it?
No, not at all. I started writing, from the time I was a little kid and I could actually learn how to write. And I was lucky because my mom was a first grade teacher. And I was super interested in learning words and, you know, writing them down and understanding them. So by the time I got to kindergarten, I could already write.
Wow.
And I loved telling stories, and it was fun to be able to put words together to tell stories.
But the thing you had, I mean, we've had somebody on the show once before who was a best-selling author at kindergarten because they wrote a little story and everybody got printed copies. But in your case, it actually went into print when you were nine. You hit the highlights.
I did. You know, and at the time, I was lucky. Again, I had this wonderful teacher, and she was always saying to me, you have such potential. You're such a good writer. And it was her. Like, I didn't even know she sent the story in to Highlights magazine. I wish my mom had kept a copy of it.
Right. I was going to ask about that because that's critical.
Right. Exactly. You know, when my parents passed away, we went through everything in the house. And I was like, well, maybe it's here.
Right.
Because another thing that I had done as a kid, and this is funny, I don't think I've ever told anybody this. I wrote a story for the Walt Disney. And I sent it into Walt Disney. And they sent me the story back, and they said, you're a wonderful writer. I think I was in the second or third grade.
Wow.
And they said, come back to us after you get out of college.
Well, see, they did that to me as well, but I was in my 50s at the time. Yeah, I did my YA stuff. I thought it would be great for the... what's it called? The school musicals that were going on from Disney at the time, High School Musical, and I thought it would be great for that, and they thought it would be great, except they weren't going to do any more of that theme. But sounds like you've got even better than me. Yeah, that's a big thing that there's no copies. I'll have to, the fact there's no copies around of it, that's pretty big. I'll have to keep an eye out at the dentist because, you know, they always got very old copies of stuff there.
So, oh, there you go. And when I was a little kid, my name was Kleinberger, so
I'll
have to look for that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have to keep a lookout for that. But you were lucky because you were able to put together your love for sort of writing and storytelling with the other thing that you were looking, you did, which was sort of like a life coaching sort of thing.
Yeah, actually what it is when I was writing the stories, and because when I first started writing this book, I was just writing stories. I grew up on a farm. I had 10 brothers and sisters. I was constantly out in the woods, you know, and I noticed a lot of lessons could be learned from nature, you know, all kinds of things. So when I first started writing, I was writing stories basically of my life and then saying, what did I learn from this? And I was passing these stories to a friend of mine, and she started asking me all these questions. And at the same time, I had gotten super interested in neuro-linguistics programming because I've always been like a very positive person and just trying to help other people see things from a different perspective, because neurolinguistics, I mean, that's basically what it is. That
right.
We can, you know, it's like we don't see things as they really are. We only see them through our view.
Right.
And everybody has a different view. So as I was writing the stories and she was asking me questions and I was starting to understand things and I was studying neurolinguistics, I said, oh my gosh. What a great opportunity to help people understand how powerful these tools really are and how they can change their lives. Because honestly, you know, when I was writing the stories, I wasn't sure I wanted to share them because they are some of my worst moments, mm-hmm. you know, from the time I was a little kid, you know, up through when I was an adult, because it's broken up into several sections. Like, there's like, it starts at a turning point in my life where I said, I'm the common denominator in everything that's not working in my life. So I share that story and that insight of coming to that moment of, oh my gosh, you know, I can't point the finger at anybody else. Right. I'm the one that's been in every one of these situations.
Well, so, that's what they say, isn't it? When you point a finger at one person, there's three fingers pointing back at you.
Exactly. And it's so true, you know, when you think about it. So, and it was just that pivotal moment. And I remember I was in my kitchen, and I remember it was like, I lived out in the country. I've always lived in the country. I love the country. And I was looking out the window, and the trees were blowing in the wind, and it was a beautiful day. You know, I got a chill. And I thought to myself, pay attention. This is important, like moving forward. And that's when I started writing the stories, and I started sharing them with my girlfriend, and she started asking me questions, you know, things that I hadn't thought about before, because I could only really see it from my perspective. And if anybody asked me about my childhood, I would have said I had a wonderful childhood. I had 8 brothers, I had 2 sisters, I grew up on a farm in the country, and fresh air every day, and we went to a small school. We had the biggest class in history, and there were 36 of us in my class. And so it was, you know, it was like so cool. So when she started asking me questions and I started looking at these tools, I'm saying, oh my gosh, that started. I remember when this happened when I was 5. You know, like, and they turned out they were all stories that were like running on a loop in my head. Like all the stories that I share in the book are stories that were running in a loop on my head, in my head. Like I saw them like a video.
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, like literally like a motion picture sort of thing going on. Yeah.
Exactly. So then what I decided to do was, as I started to understand why that was such a pivotal moment, you know, using the NLP and the tools that I had, I said, wow, okay, well, I'll tell the story just like I was going to do in my original book, but the discovery I'm going to share is what I learned by looking at this story, number one, with curiosity, number two, from a different perspective, and number three, being open to the different perspective, because, you know, you could hear somebody else's perspective and say, nope, I totally disagree.
And I think that's
kind of open.
That's one of the hardest things for people to be open. People automatically put up walls and defensive things. And I know, you know, you said about looking back, wasn't it there sort of some yellow flowers or something that you sort of remembered and suddenly realized that that's when things started?
Yeah, that was where I was 9 years old at the time, and I remember that it was Easter break, and it had been raining for a week, and everybody in my house was in a bad mood, and like I said, in the country, clay, mud, you know, I'm in upstate New York, very muddy and clay, and, you know, it was just very, it was just like not a great day, let's just put it that way, and I do tell the story in the book, but at the, as I was, later in the afternoon, I was able to get out of the house, and I was I wanted to walk out to the creek. And as I was walking out, I remember going up the hill, and the rain was coming down like misty. You know how that mist?
Yep. Oh yeah. Yep.
Face
yep.
And it feels so good. And I remember turning my face up to, closing my eyes, turning my face up to the rain, sticking my tongue out.
Yes.
Water.
Yep.
And as I came over the hill. Like I hadn't been out there in over a week because it had been so rainy. As I came over to the hill to where the creek, there was a big marsh right on the other side of the creek. And it was absolutely loaded with yellow flowers. And it was just so beautiful. And I remember very clearly bending down and taking the flowers in my hand and just staring at them. And suddenly having a moment of feeling as though somebody was watching me. And I believed in my heart and in my soul that it was God, and he had put those flowers there for me because I was having a really bad day. And then I just thought to myself, he's showing me these flowers here right now because he wants me to look at the good in the situation and not be overcome by everything that was going on. But what I did in my life was take it one step further, because what I realized looking back at that story at that time, I remember there were all sunbeams coming down because the sky was gray, but there were a few openings, and realizing it was that exact moment that I decided to look only for the good in people. So what happened was I just ignored anything bad or negative that anybody did. Mm-hmm. And there went my personal boundaries, and I made a life of being a doormat because I would just say, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. And not living authentically, because of course it wasn't okay. I was just making things okay with me and just kind of taking my life forward that way. And this was the interesting thing about it was when I was looking at it all, I always did well in business. Had very clear boundaries in business with staff, you know, and all that. I was really good at that. It was in my personal life.
Right.
And, you know, with my family and in my marriage and in those type of situations, I was always a great one for volunteering for organizations, right, because everybody would be calling me because I would always say yes, yeah. So even if I didn't want to, I would say, oh, okay, if you can't get anybody else.
Right, right.
So, and it was so interesting to me that I was able to trace it back to that exact moment. Like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
that's when that started.
But it's not just the good things you were able to, I know you sort of looking back on your communion, wasn't it? And you sort of realized perhaps where some of the mistrust came from.
Right, because I remember, again, my first communion, and it was one of those moments that it was just my parents were very, very religious. And I always had, from the time I was a really little kid, I just had such a strong faith. It didn't come from my parents or my family or anything. It just came from within.
Right.
I had this very strong faith in something bigger than me. And so I was always excited, you know, about church and like learning more about all this stuff. But the day of my first communion, again, it was a rough day. But like I said, most of the stories that I share, they started off as a rough day. But I remember when we got to the church, like my father had been really mean to my brother. Like, and then when we got up to the church and we walked up to the usher met us at the vestibule, my father's big smile on his face, you know, shaking his hand and, oh. And when I actually went to make my first communion, that my girlfriend had told me, she was a year older than me, and she had made her first communion the day before, or the year before, and she said that she met Jesus on her first communion. So I said, okay, I couldn't wait to get the communion wafer. I was so excited, and I get it. And they had told us, don't touch your, on your teeth. Well, it stuck to my mouth.
Right.
And then it got stuck to my teeth, and I was panicking. And everybody was walking. I'm walking back from communion all panicked.
Right.
And everybody else is walking back with their eyes all closed and, you know, their hands folded and all that. And then I was watching my mom with my brothers, you know, when they went up and there had been a big fight at home and all this stuff had happened. And she was acting like very prim and proper and with the eyes closed and the hands folded. And suddenly I had this moment of, is everybody faking?
Yep.
Is any of this real?
Yeah.
And that's when I started questioning organized religion. And I think I was 7 at that time. You know, and I do share in the book, I talk about how, you know, through my whole life, it set me on a path of seeking. Because I wanted to understand why I felt one way and other people felt different ways, but super suspicious of organized religion for most of my life from that incident.
Yeah, it's interesting that you were able to look back, and realize that these. In both cases, with the flowers and with your communion, you know, that these is sort of doors that you went through to realize, and you're now able to share with everybody with this this book of yours, which is called "Let My Legacy Be Love: A Shortcut to Self Legacy," because that's what it is. It's your legacy. It's about you. It's, you know, it's stuff that you've got control of it. You, whether you realize or not. And you look at the good things, the bad things, whatever. And too many people don't. Too many people just don't realize that it's something within themselves, really.
Exactly. And, you know, honestly, that's why I picked the title as I did, because I was trying to come up with a title that would tell, you know, really what this is. And when I got up early, because I'm a really early riser, and I started writing, and it was the second title that came off the end of my hand. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it, I got a chill because I thought, this is a prayer.
Right.
Let my legacy be love. You read it and you see it, and that vibration goes out. Somebody's bringing in a box of books into the bookstore. They're walking by. They're looking at it. And the whole intention of it was that it be a prayer for anybody that saw it.
Yeah.
And then the shortcut to self-loving, that was my intention, you know, when I did this, to share my stories and share the process, because most people that have read this book, because this is the second edition, I self-published the first, have said the same thing. The stories are very universal. They're very relatable because I'm not sharing any huge traumas or anything. I'm just sharing the life of a kid and then how it affected her. And then taking it forward, because that's the other cool thing about it, is I say, okay, now that I understood all this, this is how I took my life forward. And I share all the stories of, you know, as an adult, now that I understand this, this is how I'm going to do this differently. And they're all separate stories. So,
and I think that I think that's great, the fact you've done it like that, you know, using your... Well, you know, from your own experience, but in stories, because I always say that, you know, no matter what the thing the person writes, be it about abuse or an illness or something like that, if they put it in a story, if they put it in, you know, semi-fictional, for want of another word, sort of story, people reading it put themselves in the place of the character in the story. So in your case, you know, people read about what you've done and what you've come across, and they can immediately bring to mind something that's happened to them, I think. And I think that's what people really understand and learn from a lot more.
Right. And that's the cool thing. Like, after each story, there's a section called Discovery where I share, like, okay, now that I've looked at this story from a different perspective, with curiosity, with openness, this is what I now understand.
Right.
And because I use I all the way through, I was kind of careful to do that. So when somebody's reading it, I'll say, like here, I'm just reading a line off of it. My visit to the falls was to mark the end of a period of deep introspection with a ceremony of celebration. By then, I had been examining the detrimental patterns that had been holding me back from becoming the person I believed I was capable of being. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's reading this is taken in the I rather than the she, he, him,
right,
or whatever. And I didn't even realize the power of that until a couple weeks ago. I was at an expo and somebody picked up the book and he was funny. He goes, pick a chapter for me, pick a paragraph for me to read. And I picked it. I just opened up the book and I said, you know what? I don't know you, but how about this? And he picked it up. And he started reading it out loud, and he kind of got choked up. And he said, this is exactly what I need to read, because it was talking about boundaries.
Uh-huh.
And then he started telling me the story of his mom. Like, he lives with his elderly mom, and he was telling me about what was going on with that. And it didn't even really occur to me how powerful that could be to somebody else until that moment, where he was saying, I. And he's like, whoa. You know, and he was reading it out loud too, so it was kind of cool.
Right. It's and I think that's where it's good, and that's where obviously your book, you know, the fact it's a second edition as well, you know, it just shows you. But I think that's where your book will gain on a lot of others, because it people can relate to it and relate to their own lives with it, and I think that's a great plus.
Yeah, and that was my plan, you know, because I had to take these. First, I was writing the stories, and then I realized that I was dealing with these big concepts and writing, taking true stories, like things that actually happened, boiling them down, because each story is like 1,500. I think the longest is like 2,000 words, because I didn't want to get so caught up in the story. I wanted to make the point,
right,
make it entertaining, and then bring people to, okay, this is the discovery. This is what the understanding was after reading that story. So, you know, a lot of the stories are very funny, especially the childhood stories, because, you know, how you always have a little voice going on in the back. I don't
yep.
know about you, but.
Oh, no, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
That little voice going on in the back of your head that's going, oh, yeah, like I remember my mom. You know, my uncle, me telling my uncle that my mom had said I was going to hell because of something that I had done. And my uncle said, you're not going to hell. You know that God is good, right?
Right.
And I was like, well, yeah. And then a little voice in the back of my head saying, but I wasn't too worried because I knew my brother would be there too.
Right.
A little kid.
Right.
Yeah. That a little kid. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because that's what I thought. I remember my uncle saying that and me just thinking to myself, well, you know, I believe God is good and I don't really think I'm going to hell. But if I do go to hell, at least my brother will be there too. I won't be alone.
I think that's great. That's funny. As I said, it is the second edition of this. What sort of response have you had to Let My Legacy Be Love?
The first edition I self-published. And so when I had the opportunity to do this through Woodhall Press, I was able to take some of the feedback that I got from the first edition and write it into this book.
Right.
Because what people kept asking me for, I was getting emails from people, or I would meet people at different expos and expositions, and they were exhibitions, and they would say, how do I do this work? How do I do it myself? So in this book, I added a guidebook in the back to help people. It goes through some of the principles, some of the main principles of neuro-linguistic programming. There's so that they can think things through themselves. And then, of course, if they need help, of course, I'm here to help
right.
them.
Right, indeed.
But But, you know, I felt good about the first one because people actually reached out to me and sent me emails after reading the book, and they wanted to know, get more information.
Wow, that's great.
Which
is
why I added.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? That was so super
of course
exciting
it is.
To me.
Well, what's
yeah.
been it? What's
and
been
I
it?
Too,
go ahead.
I said, I think too, when, like locally, people, different business organizations and stuff that I had spoken with that read the book, people act like they're my best friend, like they know me really well. And I would think to myself, do I know you? And then they say, oh, I read your book.
I know it about you, yeah. Well, it's been, what has been great is having you on the show. Time is beating us. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you and have you tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, your book.
Okay, great. Yeah, so my name is Christina Beauchemin, and it's C-H, Christina. And the Beauchemin is B as in boy, E-A-U-C-H-E-M-I-N. My website is letmylegacybelove.com. There's a lot of information out there. This book is coming out on October 5th from Woodhull Press. And I believe that there's pre-orders available on Amazon, but I have to check to find out. But anybody who, because it's not available for me to sell on my website, but if somebody wants to send me an email and let me know, then I can email them when it's ready. And for the corporate work that I do a lot of work with corporations because I learn so much about communication. People can find me on LinkedIn under, you know, Christina Beauchemin, and that's under my name. And of course, Facebook, Instagram, all under Christina Beauchemin.
Well, Christina, it's great having you on the show. Thank you so much, and good luck with the relaunch of the book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Barry.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Christina, and it's Beauchemin. I said Beauchemin because I'm thinking of a musician. My fault. Beauchemin, B-E-A-U-C-H-E-M-I-N. And we've been talking to her about her book, Let My Legacy Be Love, A Shortcut to Self-Legacy. Very interesting. And I think a lot of people, when they read it, will find themselves thinking about themselves and perhaps putting themselves to right, hopefully, a bit, because that's down to us after all. Well, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...